Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9.5 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Monday, December the 17th. And we will celebrate our four-legged best friends this hour, our dogs. Dogs have many attributes. They give us unconditional love. They guard our homes. They herd our sheep. My Australian Shepherd mix herds me to the treat jar on occasion. But do you believe that dogs can also save our lives? Do you believe dogs have the power to heal us when we are sick or warn us if we are about to get sick? Our guest this hour has compiled some amazing stories about life-saving dogs in her new book, Pause and Effect. And we want to hear if you have had or if you have heard of any similar stories about the healing power of dogs. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send your question or your story via email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Sharon Saxon. She's a journalist and television producer who has worked for ABC, NBC, and local stations in Baltimore, Chicago, and San Francisco. She is an American Kennel Club dog show judge and a breeder of champion Whippets and Brussels Griffins. She is the author of Pause and Effect, The Healing Power of Dogs. Good morning.
Good morning.
And you also were the co-author of a book called Pause and Reflect, which was about the dog-human bond.
Yes, and that's where it all starts, is that each one of us who has a dog have some kind of a bond with that dog. And as I was looking into that book, which is about men and their dogs, so many men started to talk about how one of the most important things the dog did was to help them through illness. And it got me to thinking, are they exaggerating, or is this possibly some truth to this? And so I started to research it.
Yeah, and you had your own personal experiences with this, like a dog you had when you were a child that helped you through the grief after the death of your mother.
That's right, and I think it's one of the most important functions of dogs because they give us such unconditional love. It doesn't matter who you are, what you've done, how you feel. Your dog is there. He's going to love you. And that kind of love by itself is very healing. That's the kind of the baseline of my book, is that dogs give us that emotional support.
Yeah, and your story didn't surprise me much. I've known some people who were elderly people who maybe lost a spouse and were just in terrible grief, but life was worth living because they still had their dog.
That story is repeated again and again, and in fact, there was a study done by some nurses at the University of Wisconsin Nursing School very early on in the early 90s that helped propel more dogs into nursing homes. Dogs have an amazing power to bring back memories for elderly who may have Alzheimer's or other problems. And I think one of the powerful things is that dogs are generally all about touch, some breeds more than others. But a lot of people in nursing homes have no one to visit them. In fact, I think that the number is about 2/3 of the people in nursing homes don't have anyone to visit them. But a dog visits, and a dog touches you. And science has shown that the stimulation of being touched on your skin sends endorphins into your bloodstream and makes you feel better. And dogs provide that for people.
Yeah, and There have been studies about pets in general and dogs maybe specifically that the petting of the dog and having the dog there will lower the blood pressure too.
Absolutely, and that was some of the things I wanted to find out about, and I quote a number of studies because studies were done where they took blood from some patients, and then they had them pet the dogs, and then they took their blood again. And an easier thing to do, they took their heart rate and they took their blood pressure. And in every case, there were beneficial health benefits to the person who was touching, seeing, interacting, or talking with the dog. You know, another interesting thing, I think, is that when people bring their dogs, this benefit takes place whether or not the person knows the dog, is familiar with the breed. Dogs have this unique power to meet up with everybody. I thought, well, maybe it really would only work if it was your own dog that came to see you. But no, it works for all dogs.
One of the stories that I found quite powerful, well, a lot of the stories in your book were powerful, but the dog that signaled to its owner that she could have a very serious health condition, he was smelling her face or kissing her face in one particular area, and apparently the dog was smelling cancer.
Yes, and this is a new field, and it's one that I looked into very carefully in my book because it's absolutely fascinating. But what's happened is that a number of people have been telling these stories that my dog is bumping this place in my body. And in her case, she was used to having her dog would lie near her head when she had migraine headaches. So she was aware that he was sensitive to her health. But then he became very frantic about her cheek, pressing it, bumping it. She actually went to the doctor and said, "There's nothing wrong with you. Everything's fine. Looks fine." Went home. The dog said, "No, something is wrong." He would not stop bumping her cheek. So she said, I'm going to get a second opinion. And she went to a specialist, and to her shock, she had very severe jaw cancer, which was not visible, and it was not painful, and she ended up losing half her jaw to cancer. But even a month more had gone by, she would have lost her life to this cancer.
And there is scientific research now being done on whether indeed dogs can smell cancer.
Yes, and a lot of it is being done in Florida by a doctor named Jim Walker, who's an olfactory scientist. And what he did was to determine the threshold of how good can a dog really smell. He did scientific studies that he documented to show how well a dog can smell. He found the threshold at which a human can smell, and then he took the dogs, and they were trained to give a signal when they smelled a certain smell. It was a chemical. And they kept mixing it down. He got to one part per trillion. So the determination of his study was that a dog smells 10,000 times better than a human. Not just 10 times, 10,000 times. And so the next person to study was someone who he didn't know if cancer had a smell. No, we don't have a machine that would tell you that. And most cancers don't have a smell to a human. But very quickly, they learned from the dogs that it does have a smell. And what I think is it must be a really awful smell to the dog because they are able to pick it out in such tiny, tiny beginning stages.
And then tell the story of the woman who I believe had fibromyalgia or some sort of constant pain, and then she had a dog named a toaster dog.
Yes, that was a real shock to me. I was looking into the history of dogs with humans, wondering if for centuries we've known how healing dogs are. And I found the story of the Aztecs and their dog, which has a very strange long Aztec name. It's called the Xolo Itzcuintle. That's the name of the breed. They call it Xolo for short. And this dog is hairless, so it's very warm. If you pick it up, it's very, very warm. And the Aztec priests prescribed this dog for people who had pain, and most likely the pain they were talking about was arthritis. And so the person would lie down, they would put these warm dogs over their joints, and the pain would go away. And that is what happened. Warmth is a very important part of relieving pain. So a woman in San Diego actually discovered this on her own. She had a friend with a Zolo, and she put her arm under the Zolo, and her pain in her arm went away. And she was shocked. She said, oh, my gosh, you know, it's like having a heating pad. So she looked into it. She found the history, and now she's encouraging other people with fibromyalgia and constant pain to look into this and have the dog help you relieve your pain.
We're talking about the healing power of dogs and welcoming your questions for our guest. Maybe your stories about such a dog. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Do you believe dogs can help us heal, can save our lives even? Well, our guest certainly does. She is the author of the new book, Pause and Effect, The Healing Power of Dogs. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We hope you join in. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Very happy to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon, At Issue with Ben Marins. After 5, Ben and his guest will take a look at the green building movement. Green building movement and how it impacts homes, schools, and businesses. And probably the earth as well. That's coming up later this afternoon. We are talking about the healing power of dogs. Our guest is Sharon Saxon, a journalist, television producer, an American Kennel Club dog show judge, a breeder of champion Whippets and Brussels Griffins, and the author of Pause and Effect, The Healing Power of Dogs, in which she chronicles a number of stories of some amazing stories of the healing power of dogs, dogs that detected cancer in their owners, dogs that helped people who had arthritis or fibromyalgia, dogs that helped people through a deep depression. And how about, Sharon, dogs that could predict if their owner was about to have some sort of seizure, like an epileptic seizure?
This is the most amazing new area that what fascinated me in the beginning about these seizure alert dogs is that no one can train a seizure alert dog. He has to train himself because we have no way to simulate whatever it is that causes a seizure. So it had to be the dog who saw that something was wrong. What they did start to do was say, well, let's teach the dog what to do after the person's had the seizure because they fall to the ground and they could hurt themselves. So they taught dogs different things. Some were taught to go get someone to help. Some were taught to bring a bottle of pills and a bottle of water. Some were taught to press on a phone that would summon someone. Some were taught to bark. They were all taught responses for when the person fell down and was sick. And so after the dogs learned the responses, about 75% of the dogs would start to bring the pills before the seizure happened, before the person even had any idea that a seizure was going to happen. And that's how the dogs were training themselves to alert the person. And the person needs to know because they have to get into a safe place. They have to lie down. They have to make sure they're not going to get hurt because of how awful a seizure is. It's some of the most amazing things that a dog can do for us, I think.
Well, as I suspected, our lines are filled with people who want to talk about this or have a question. Tom in Burlington. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
After President Kennedy died, I took care of his dog. His dog was named Charlie. He was a big white poodle, and he was a standard poodle in Georgetown. If you're from Washington, you know pretty much about Georgetown. Mrs. Kennedy lived on 30th Street. She lived on N Street and Q Street, and I lived on M Street. And when she would go to New Jersey, she would give me this dog, her dog, Charlie. And Charlie meant very, very much to her because after President Kennedy was shot, he was her companion. She loved this dog. And what I trained him to do, when I would ride the bicycle, he would stop at the corner, and I would be on the street riding my bicycle, and he would be on the sidewalk, and he would run down the street as fast as I could, and then he would stop at the corner, and then he'd cross the street, and we could go for miles like this. And anyway, he was a really smart dog, and but what happened after she took him to New Jersey, and he had a sister, Turid, and they were chasing chickens, and the farmer next door shot both of them.
Tom, what is the healing power of these dogs?
Well, the healing power was dogs teach you nonverbal communication, and humans rely on speaking for their communicating, and what you can learn from a dog is the nonverbal part of it, which is very important that humans kind of miss when they in relationships. As a matter of fact, if you're a lot of relationships that wind up in divorce court, the first thing that they lose is the nonverbal communication. Hugging and the stuff that an animal can teach you, how important it is to be warm and with something, and the touching, how important that is in a relationship.
Tom, thank you very much. You have quite a varied and interesting background. Every time you call, you have a different story. I didn't know that you had something to do with President Kennedy's standard poodle. But do you have a reaction to Tom's story, Sharon?
I think what he said is very true, that nonverbal communication that a dog teaches. And I researched some students, high school students, they're called at-risk students, students who have committed crimes or something's gone wrong at home. And the social worker told me that one of the most important things that he discovered happened with the dogs, that the kids have often attachment reactive disorder, which means they haven't been held and they haven't been shown a lot of love from their parents for whatever reason. And it's very, very difficult to reach these kids, but a dog can reach them.
Yeah, one of your stories dealt with a family that I think was going to be purchasing a dog from you, and the boy in the family had some sort of developmental disability, and one of your puppies sought him out.
That's right, mm-hmm. And it was one of those times when I saw the healing power of a dog right in my own kennel. The boy had developmental problems. It was not autistic, although dogs now are being very helpful with autistic children. But in this case, Sean had some handicaps, and he had never had a friend because he was unable to relate to children of his own age. And he came to the kennel. They were purchasing a dog for his little sister. And she was a very responsible child and very bright, and she picked out a puppy. And in the meantime, I had an older puppy at my kennel, a whippet I called Captain, who had never taken a shine to anybody. The rest of his litter had been sold. He was about 6 months old, but he never came out and greeted anyone and gave any kind of sign that he liked a person. But the day that Sean came and sat down, he went to Sean, and he picked out Sean, and he got on his lap, and I said, that's amazing, because mm-hmm. that dog has never picked out anyone. So they decided to take him, and he became Sean's first friend, and he showed Sean how you make a friend, mm-hmm. how talking and spending time with somebody helps you make a friend, and it helped Sean to make human contacts by having this dog contact.
Oh, and Sean was so proud. It brought him out of his shell a little bit because this dog thought he was so special that made him feel special.
That's right, mm-hmm. And it's such a wonderful thing our dogs do for us. We really have to work to be worthy of what our dogs think of us.
Yeah. Tom, thanks for the story. Mark in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, Mark.
Hi. My son and I built a log home for my son and his family to live in a few years ago. Very strenuous work, and we'd come home at the end of the day and have supper. And one night while I was trying to eat my supper, because I had tendonitis in my elbows really, really bad, and this Basenji that they had came over and started licking my my left elbow and licked it continuously for a good 5 minutes. And then he walked around to the other side of my chair and did the same thing to my right elbow. And I didn't have any more trouble with tendonitis for the rest of that summer.
Isn't that something, Sharon?
That is something. Mm. And, you know, what I think is the important part of that story is that Mark did not say, go away, leave me alone, stop it. Yeah. This is something I see in humans now. We're learning to listen.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Mark, for that story. Angie in West Dallas. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a question about the story of the Zolo dog and fibromyalgia.
Mm-hmm.
My mother has fibromyalgia, and I was just wondering, what's the difference between using a heating pad and then using the Zolo dog?
You don't have to plug in the Zolo dog.
Okay, so it's just the heat. It's nothing else.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it's the heat, and presumably the love and the bond probably has something to do with it, Sharon?
I would say, mm-hmm. yes, because, again, that touching skin to skin has a healing reaction that also can be measured. So I think the people are getting both of those, the heat and the touch.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much, Angie. Yeah, I don't have fibromyalgia, but I do have an Australian Shepherd mix named Lady that came to us from a Humane Society about 3 years ago. And she's a toaster. Like I said, I had a bad cold. Nothing as serious as some of the people in your books, but the dogs will curl up with you. They know when you're not really feeling well, and they just want to comfort you.
Yes, and that's why a lot of people can relate to what I've written about and are interested in how far it's gone, because all of us with a dog usually have received some sort of comfort to help us. Our dogs know us sometimes better than we know ourselves, and they're there to give support sometimes when nobody else is.
Yeah. Ryan in Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a question for your guest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As far as the practical applications of using dogs to heal us, I would imagine that there are efforts in kind of the clinical environment to integrate dogs into, you know, doctors and so forth. What I'm wondering is if there are also efforts to maybe at a consumer level to teach people how to train their dogs to be sensitive to problems with the owner or things like that, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes, I think there's a more interest now in training dogs than there ever has been, and I do think it's because people are beginning to listen to the dog and see that the dog has something to offer. There are more and more service dog training classes available, and the service dogs are the ones who are trained to do specific tasks for people who can't do them for themselves. For instance, they have mobility dogs, people who don't really need a wheelchair, but they have trouble standing up and walking. They can get a dog to help them. People who are in wheelchairs and can't reach their light switches, they need their wallet or their pills brought over. These service dogs are being trained. And every place I look, I find more people offering these courses. And that's very intense training. It's not easy. You have to spend a lot of time with the dog. And I did check the on the internet and look and saw that, yeah, there are a lot of service dog organizations now forming in Wisconsin and a lot of places where you can train the dog for service.
We are talking about the healing power of dogs. Our guest is Sharon Saxon, who is the author of Pause and Effect, The Healing Power of Dogs. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. The book contains a number of stories of people who were helped by their dogs, healed by their dogs, warned by their dogs that a health crisis was impending. We welcome your stories or your questions for our guest. Bill in Orfordville is with us now. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Good morning. Good morning. Wonderful show. Mm-hmm. We just lost a wonderful diagnostic dog. He used to tell me when my diabetes was flaring up, if I kicked myself in the shins and it wasn't healing, the dog would come around and administrate doggy first aid, with the saliva and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Could just diagnose me like crazy. It was so good, she could count the pulses in an electric fence. And she, and stuff like that. This sensitivity was just unbelievable. She was a Wolf River Samoy Husky, and just incredible.
I didn't get that. She could count the pulses of an electric fence.
Yes, because when we got her from rescue, she was a pretty wild child out of Superior, Wisconsin. She had been going in and out of the Walmart store up there, stealing her food to survive.
Mm.
And so we are with the Wisconsin Samoy Rescue, and we fostered her and adopted her. But we had to put a fence around because she was an escape artist. And she would get down flat on the ground, and we had to keep lowering the wire, and she would count the pulses and know just when to go under the wire.
Very smart dog. But she would lick an area
exactly.
That was...
Exactly. She would pinpoint the area. Mm-hmm. I have some arthritis and things like that. She was just absolutely incredible. As far as diagnostic feelings, unfortunately, she was only 3 years old when she passed of a tumor on her blood vessels, heart. And just one of the most amazing dogs I've ever seen. We're waiting on a puppy next June or July of the same offshoot of the Samoy coming out of Minnesota. But they're the original, Samoys with the Laplanders and all that. But they're just incredible. You didn't have to talk to this dog. She knew what you were going to say before you said it.
Yeah.
Yes, it was a border collie, equivalent.
Yeah, isn't that the amazing stories there, too? So many times you do hear stories about dogs that were, abandoned or at a humane society and then end up saving the lives of the people who rescued them. So good for you, Bill. What about the dog that apparently knew when Bill's diabetes was acting up, Sharon?
That is a wonderful thing dogs can do. Diabetes, comas, apparently is another thing that smells very, very bad to a dog when the hypoglycemic action is taking place in a person's blood. Apparently that has a smell. It's just amazing what these dogs are figuring out. Another thing I liked about his story is that each time I interviewed someone, they all had such an attachment to a breed often, and his story about the Samoyed and how sensitive they are reminds me of one of the people in my book who had Akitas to notify her about her very severe seizures. And she says very confidently that there's no dog like an Akita. Akitas are the ones with the sensitivity to let you know when the seizure's coming. But in fact, I found there is no specific breed that's better at that than another. There are Chihuahuas who can do it. There are Great Danes who can do it. And it's in the canine nature, I guess.
Oh, besides seizures, are there any breeds that are better or whatever at certain healing powers than others?
It's fascinating that there are not breeds that are mm-hmm. better than others. I ask that question because I am a dog show judge, and I judge hound breeds, and in there we have the scent hounds, like the bloodhounds and the beagles and the basset hounds, who are supposed to have very much better olfactory powers than other dogs. And in fact, they probably do. But when it comes to these certain things about pinpointing something wrong with their human, every breed turned out to be able to do it.
Yeah.
And the cancer study doctors were really funny to me because the first one who was studying skin cancer, he went to a police trainer and he got a dog that was used to sniffing for bombs. So that's a dog used to using his nose. He's used to identifying a scent. And their results, he had 99% success rate. But in the other tests, the doctors who wanted to find out if there was a smell to different kinds of cancer, they trained their pet dogs. They had Cocker Spaniels, they had Portuguese Water Dog, they had a poodle, and they had mutts, all different kinds, and they were pretty much equally able to do that job.
Next we go to Lisa in Walworth County. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello. I have a little Chworky. He's half Chihuahua, half Yorkie. And he's just a real sweet little guy. I am a survivor of stage 4 terminal cancer, leukemia, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Mm-hmm.
And this little guy, when I was getting over it, he would just stick right around to my chest and right around to my abdomen, which is where I had the huge lump areas. And he just... wherever I go, he goes. I mean, if I'm cooking, if I'm cleaning, if I'm whatever, he has to be under my feet. He stays right by me. I'm still trying to get over. There was a head-on collision back in 03, and I got him. He came along to me in 04, 05, and my father was killed, and my mother has severe brain damage now.
Oh, my gosh.
And, yes, and... I had a minpin at the time, and her name was Cuddles, and she was right. She just knew instantly when it happened. She was just, and she didn't leave my side. I mean, she was with me constantly, and she was so old. I finally had to put her down when my mother was out of the hospital and back doing, you know, fairly okay and stuff. She came with me when I had to put her down, and it was very hard when I had to let go of Cuddles. But then I did dog care in my home, and someone brought this little Chworky, and they never came back and got him. And his name was Boots, and I changed his name to Tiny because he's so tiny. But when I got cancer, he would not leave my side. He would not get off of me. And he's, you know, if I, like I say, if I get up to go anywhere, he's right with me every single time.
Well, Lisa, you've had dogs helping you through some really traumatic times. How are you now?
Oh, I'm cancer free.
Excellent.
Yes. It was just a week. If the chemo didn't take care of me, the doctor said that, I had it really bad, and they said it was about a week, and if the chemo wouldn't have taken, I would have been gone.
And you think Tiny helped you heal through that?
Oh, greatly.
Yeah.
He's just a real sweetheart. He's just always there for me. He's right by my side. There's a story my mom told me long before the accident. She said that there was a man that was in a fire, and he was burned over good 90% of his body, and he was really bad off, and he had a dog, and I think it was a golden retriever or something, and the dog just wanted to lick him, and even though it was extremely painful, he just let him do so. And she said that what she read was he healed. I mean, the doctors realized that he healed twice as fast with as less scarring because of the dog licking him.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about that aspect, too. The dog, there has long been the thought that the dog's saliva was healing. Is it, Sharon?
Yes. As a matter of fact, there is a low level of penicillin in a dog's saliva. And I talk about the patron saint of dogs, Saint Rock, who he became ill with the plague, and the plague made open sores on your body. And the dog came and constantly was licking at his sore, and he was healed. Doctors have made studies, and there is a certain amount of penicillin. Now, it's not a lot, so you'd be much better off getting a pill than having your dog lick something. But I think there may be more mysterious powers that we really don't know about. I have not heard about the ability to help with burns.
Yeah.
Have not heard that.
You have heard, though, of a dog like Tiny helping someone through cancer?
Yes, and what is so wonderful about the dogs is that they provide something to people, which I heard in her voice, in Lisa's voice. There were two studies that I talk about in the book, one done in Japan and one done in England, where they wanted to make sure they studied this fact that therapy dogs coming to nursing homes would be good and that dogs being around elderly people would be good. So they were taking notes and writing everything down and making a study of these people. And they found out something they didn't expect to find out, which what they expected was to find out that the people felt better and things were going better for them. But ancillary to that, they found out that the people were going to the doctor less often, and maybe most importantly, they weren't giving up. People who owned a dog or had a dog at home to go to survived their heart attacks better, they survived their cancer better, and more of the dog owners were still alive a year after some horrible medical event than the non-dog owners.
Yeah. And Cuddles was appropriately named. Cuddles helping Lisa through a very traumatic car accident that she survived, but apparently her parents, well, one of her parents did not.
Yes, mm-hmm. And they do seem to know when they can fill in emotionally for us.
Yeah. We're going to take a short pause and then welcome more stories about the healing power of dogs, maybe a dog in your life. Or maybe you have a question for our guest, who is the author of the book, Pause and Effect, The Healing Power of Dogs. Sharon Saxon is a journalist, a television producer, an American Kennel Club dog show judge, a breeder of champion Whippets and Brussels Griffins. 1-800-642-1234. If you'd like to join in Madison, 263-1890, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock, and she will be talking with her guest about all things political after 9 o'clock every Monday in the 9 o'clock hour. Kathleen and her guest discuss the major news stories from the previous week. And Kathleen and her guest will talk about the presidential race heating up and more coming up. We're talking about the healing power of dogs for the rest of this hour. And Molly in Baraboo is our next caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. It's so funny. Whenever I call, there's such an organic process that brings you around to my topic, which I really appreciate.
Good.
I used to work with dogs, and I am stunned at how it seems to be a calling for some dogs, just like it's a calling for some people. Like you said, it's not a particular breed that mm-hmm. tends to heal. It's one dog. It's random. And a favorite story, I had a friend who rescued dogs from abusive situations, and he rescued a great big Doberman that had been on a very, very short chain, left in a backyard, abused, really a bad situation. But this Doberman was incredibly peaceful and sweet. And they found a nursing home that had had two Dobermans, and one of the Dobermans had recently passed. And so they decided to see if this Doberman would work out in this nursing home. And the day that they brought the dog there, was just a couple days after the wife of one of the residents had passed away. And this man was sort of inconsolable and removed. And they brought this Doberman in, and he went directly to this gentleman and sat next to him and put his head in his lap and wouldn't leave his side.
Yeah, that's going to make me cry. How
I
much
know.
You sure?
Yeah, that is. You know, I have a similar story. I was attending a judge's seminar yesterday, and they were teaching us about boxers, and we were studying the structure and the gait of the boxer, and they also wanted to tell us about the temperament. So with one of the people had some slides there, and they showed a nursing home where she went taking therapy dogs, and there was a woman there who hadn't spoken to anyone for a year, was very kind of bunched up, almost in a fetal position, sitting there, not focusing, not paying attention. The boxer went in, went immediately to this woman, and got against her, pressed against her. Slowly, she began to pet the dog, look at the dog, and then eventually she smiled at the dog.
And the woman told us that all the nurses started to cry because for a year the woman hadn't smiled and hadn't had any response. And the dog brought it out.
What about Molly's thought that it's a calling for some dogs just as it is for some people?
Absolutely. I agree. I would agree with that. There seems to be a spectrum, and some dogs are very, very sensitive, and some dogs are not sensitive at all, and I would say that's the same as it is in people. And one important thing I think about that is how important it is to find the right dog for yourself. I think sometimes people rush into getting a dog or they get one impulsively, and it might not be the right dog. I always tell puppy buyers you need to use your head first, which use logic and figure out if you need a big dog or a small dog or a shaggy dog and pick the breed, but then use your heart. And when you go to look at puppies, make sure you get the one that wants you.
Yeah. Molly, thank you very much for calling. Mary in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks so much for this program. It's wonderful. I've recently become aware of a psychiatric service dog society. And I think that this is fairly new, although I'm not positive about that. But people with psychiatric disorders, they are able to, through the help of a trainer, be able to train their own dog. Like, for instance, if a person is suffering with major depression and have a symptom of apathy, the dog can be trained with tactile stimulation. Or if there are suicidal thoughts, the dog can be trained to stay with the person and try to get them out of that mode of thinking. With memory loss, remind the person to take medication or to find their keys or whatever is missing. And I'm interested in looking into this and see if I can be a part of that. Just wondering if Sharon is aware of this society.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I don't have a lot of information in my book on it just because I got to the deadline and I had to turn in my book. But one thing that interests me about these psychiatric service dogs is how many different places in the country I came across psychiatrists, psychologists who on their own noticed what a big help their dogs were. And in fact, I think you find a lot of therapists now who have the dog in the room with them because it helps the person with their memories and it helps them at their comfort level. The trained psychiatric service dogs are they're amazing again. They have to be very sensitive, they have to be trained with the person that they're going to serve, but it's an amazing function that they provide there, and I think there's a lot more that can be done in that area that we haven't discovered yet.
Well, I have a website, a caller who had called in to say in Wisconsin there is an organization called Pause to Heal, P-A-W-W-S. It's not spelled as you might think. PauseToHeal.org. And this is an organization where the dogs are trained to help autistic children and to help even sexual assault victims. I'm not sure if it's the exact kind of psychiatric service dog that Mary was talking about, but that's one resource. Do you have a specific name or resource that Mary might follow up on, Sharon?
Yes. There are a number of psychiatric service dog organizations. I think the national one, I believe, is in Washington, the state of Washington. But if you looked for the Assistant Dogs Incorporated, there is a national umbrella organization of all service dog organizations, and contacting them, their website has a list of all the different places you can go to get more information.
Yeah. Thank you, Mary, for the call. Linda in Pewaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I have a cold, but I had an experience after my second child was born. She was a couple of weeks old, and one day the dog started acting really strangely with the Springer Spaniel. She was hiding under the bed and she just had this weird look in her eye, and I actually called the veterinarian because I thought, well, the dog must be ill, and I talked with the vet, and we decided, well, we'll wait a little while because the dog, doesn't seem to have any physical issues or anything. And then later in the day, it actually turned out that I was ill. I had a very high fever, and I had to be hospitalized, in fact, and they never did figure out what was wrong, but I'm sure that the dog was reacting to the fact that I was sick, and I didn't actually know that I was.
Yeah, and the dog was better after you got help.
Oh, yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that he was, too. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that he was. He didn't know what to do about it, but he knew that something was wrong. And what they do with the service dogs, of course, is to teach them something that they can do, like bringing pills or getting help. But I do think your dog knew. He knew better than you did what was wrong.
Yeah. Thank you, Linda. Valerie in Madison. Hi, Valerie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had an experience that I thought was very interesting. I adopted a golden retriever from the shelter, and that we were extremely close. And about 4 years later, I went through a period of extreme anxiety and depression, at which point I moved to a neighborhood that was kind of marginal, and I was pretty much frightened constantly. And she had been a very outgoing, friendly dog, and during the 6 months that I was in this condition, she turned into a guard dog. Anybody who came to the door or the gate, she acted like a trained Doberman, which is very un-golden retriever-like. And then when that period of time was over and I moved to a better place and a better time in my life, she changed back to very friendly to everyone.
Yeah, so she was certainly guarding you, but did you think it was reacting to your anxiety?
Absolutely, because there wasn't any outside threat.
Yeah.
It was all my horrible anxiety.
Yeah, so, sure.
That story reminds me of that a lot of people who spoke to me talked about how they believed that their dogs were angels. They would tell me, my dog is a guardian angel, and God sent him to me, and that's what he is.
Yeah.
And while I don't know about that, but certainly if you think that a guardian angel is someone looking out for you and wanting the best for you and trying to help you, dogs do that.
Yeah, that reminds me, and we only have a minute to go, it's the story we started on, the woman, I think her dog's name was Kyle. And didn't she get another dog after Kyle had passed that she saw Kyle's in the eye of this new dog.
And Kyle passed in August, and she was so sad. She just couldn't get another dog or do anything about it. And her birthday was November 7th. And on November 7th, her friend called her up and said, Russie, can you please take care of my sister's Scottish Terrier because they've had something terrible happen and they have to leave and there's no one to take care of the dog. And so Russie got the dog, and she looked at the dog, and she said, I saw Kyle's face.
Yeah.
I saw him looking at me.
Well, it's a nice place to end it, because we are out of time. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Sharon Saxon is author of Pause and Effect. Thanks to Carmen Jackson and to Christina Taylor for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Ideas Network.